You guys, it's Andy's Girls. Now, I'm on a little bit of a journey the next couple days. I was supposed to get a colonoscopy in February of 2020. It got canceled because I had a little bit of a neuro reaction. So it has been rescheduled for Tuesday the 25th. I'm recording this on Sunday, about an hour before I start prep. And I got to tell you, I'm really hoping it doesn't get canceled a second time, because if I have to do this motherfucker a third time, I'm gonna be really pissed. So I've just been trying to like calm myself because I'm a little nervous about whatever is in store. I've been Googling Reddit and then looking at whatever people are saying on that MySpace, but 2024 remix. Just to kind of get some thoughts, get some feedback, prepare myself and my spirit accordingly. And so I thought to myself, what can I do to cleanse my soul before my body and I guess colon or whatever follows suit? And I thought, you know what? Orange County is soon upon us. Season,
is it 18?
Is it 18? Is 18? Is that possible that it's in fact season 18? So season 18 is premiering in just a couple weeks. And I realized this is the time. There was something I think I promised AGs, but I definitely promised myself in the last several months that I wanted to do. And I realized, you know what? I actually really want to do this before the new season premieres, which is to go back in time and watch the lost season of Orange County, the COVID season. Now, I hadn't seen a single episode of season 15, the lost COVID season of Orange County, which is considered by many Bravoholics to be among the worst seasons of Housewives in modern Housewives history. So I thought to myself, okay, I think it's time. I think we have to go back and unpack it. And also, you know, there's not a lot on Bravo right now. And especially because Vanderpump Rules, Oy Vey, and Summer House, may its memory always be a blessing, are officially, essentially on hiatus. I mean, we're done with those new episodes. Obviously, VPR has taken a little bit of a break. I assume Summer House is going to pick up filming in like, frankly, 15 minutes. I really feel like this is kind of the time to discuss it. And so I hadn't seen any episode of season 15 at all. And then many, many months later, at least a year later, maybe 2 years later, I don't remember when it was, but I watched the reunion arc. And I just kind of felt to myself, I'm sort of curious. I heard this was terrible. I heard there's like not a ton, you know, at that point to really focus on. So I just kind of wanted to, you know, watch the reunion arc, which is essentially like the Wikipedia version of any Housewives season. If you really do want to skip ahead, I would say, you know, if you haven't watched any season of New Jersey is a terrible example. Any season of, you know, name a franchise other than New Jersey, what you could potentially do if you really genuinely wanted to catch up to a current season, hopefully go back in time, I would say to at least at a minimum watch the reunions, because they are intended to be a little bit of a summary and an update and that conflict and sometimes conflict resolution. So I watched whatever period of time, well after it aired, the reunion arc, of which I have no memory of what occurred. I know that I watched it and I feel like it took place on like a theatrical stage kind of thing, but I do not remember anything. The only thing I remember was like everyone hated Bronwyn, and that was my kind of takeaway. But I've heard from AGs since who've said, listen, I know that you haven't watch season 15, but it would be a good idea, especially as someone who hashtag stands for Shan, because as we know, the upcoming season is going to be a shit show. Now, that was a recommendation I heard from many of you, and that was before all things Alexis and John began. So now to know that the Alexis and John pairing is a huge, seemingly a huge part of the upcoming season, how could it not be? Plus all of, the issues stemming from Shannon and her DUI and arrest and questions about drinking. I was told by AGs, you know, like this gets into the heart of some of the darkness from Shan and John's dynamic. And I realized, you know what? That's a really good point. This is the perfect time to watch because of kind of skipping over it. I mean, I had this idea based on what I saw in a limited way from you know, the seasons that followed about all things Shan and John, and just an instinct last season that John Jansen was up to no good. He just kind of, there was something about him that just didn't feel as entirely positive as what Shannon was trying to tell us he was. Plus the information we were hearing about from cast members, from Emily, from other people of like, Shannon, you're calling us when you're intoxicated. You're telling us terrible things about your relationship. And then you forget that you've picked up the phone and you're expecting us to say that everything looks great with you and John, or you're essentially saying that we're traitors or liars when we're saying stuff is not great, but we're hearing it from you. We're getting like first person turtle time calls. And so to go back and be able to see a little bit more of that potentially, or maybe just even a little bit more of the work that maybe Shan and John were doing to make things look great when they probably weren't, is to me of interest. So I just watched the premiere episode. Now, I don't know if it's because when I think of like worst seasons in Housewives history, the two most recent that come to mind are New York season 13 and the most recent season of Potomac. I know that there is a lot of frustration about the current season of New Jersey. If you have listened to any recent Andy Scrolls episode, I go in and out. Like there are moments when I'm like, I hate this. And then there are moments where I'm like, you know what? This episode, I could talk about this for forever. I mean, I recorded two episodes with Tom Smythe when he was here the other day, one of which you will hear this week about our experiences at the world premiere of Celine Dion's documentary film and just our reaction to the film itself and which she shared at the premiere. And we also recorded about New Jersey. Tom and I, after recording for over 2 hours, I think we recorded for 2.5 hours, essentially with two small stops, one for me to use the loo and the other because I had one or two doctors call me in the middle of recording. I was like, I have to take this so that I know if this procedure is still being recommended or canceled. So with that being said, we recorded for forever. And even after recording, we hung out for like at least 20 minutes, maybe 30, talking about New Jersey. Cause I was like, you know what? There was some stuff that I didn't get to during the recording. I don't remember what we were saying, but I was like, can we talk a little bit more about Jackie? Like, can we talk a little bit more about Dolo? Can we talk a little more about like Melissa, Tree, Marge? So that kind of tells you something. Like with New York season 13, I didn't feel curious about this season. I just felt bad watching it. Like I felt like I was participating in a toxic cycle. I will never get over the Black Shabbat to be continued arc. I think that was one of the worst produced, cringiest, just terrible, you know, kind of to be continued sort of what the network was trying to tell us was like a special event that I've seen maybe on any franchise ever. Like I could never go back to watch those specific episodes. And while I have actually gone back recently and watched some of the reunion, it's very, very tough. And Potomac, just because of the stalemate, because the cast couldn't move forward, there is a similarity certainly between what's going on with Potomac and what's going on in New Jersey. But I think New Jersey is still able to provide things that I want to talk about, things that I enjoy breaking down on the podcast, even if I'm not like necessarily overwhelmed in the moment, there are still solid episodes and moments of light. Like Marge sending the text message to Dolo and then Dolo saying like, 1 second, I need to look at my phone. Like I've got news about my dog. And to go within like a percentage of a second to go from like, I got something about my dog to like, you called me a slob is magnificent. Like, that is a genuine LOL laugh out loud moment. So I think that there's still a lot of value to be found in New Jersey. I certainly would not put it at the anywhere near the same level of New York season 13 and of the most recent season of Potomac, which just for me, just my two shekels are to me what I would argue are like the two worst seasons that come to mind of recent. We're not talking early day Miami. We're not talking just a lot of the stuff relating to Mikhail. Although I know that there are some people who are going back. I don't know how this sort of came up, but there are people recently who are going back to rewatch New Jersey or to rewatch DC or to watch it maybe for the first time. I watched it when it originally aired. I actually would potentially be interested in rewatching it and recapping it on the pod. It's entirely up to you guys. I think it could be kind of fascinating. But the Mikhail of it all and the White House party, so much of that clouded the season. And because Tarek was such an abysmal person who seemed incredibly manipulative, and he had a really dark energy around them and was obviously not who he was pretending to be. I mean, there are some joke moments coming out of that season, most especially the realization. I think it came out during the reunion that Tarek and Mikhail had filmed their audition scene in a house they'd either rented or borrowed. And in their audition tape were like showing photos. I think if I remember this correctly, this is several years ago, showing photos of people who were not them in framed pictures being like, these are our good friends. Like, don't worry about it. This family posing with a kid, we're just pals with them. Don't worry about that. Look over here. There could be some kind of joy that could come out of that kind of rewatch and possible recording experience, because that happened prior to the to AG. A beginning. So there wouldn't have been a time, I guess, until now when I really had thought about, deep diving DC. It would be the first time I did that on the podcast, the second time I've watched. So when I thought about season 15 of Orange County, I think I put it in the same bucket of like, this is one of the worst seasons to have occurred on Housewives. And I watched the premiere episode and I kind of thought to myself, is this season deserving of that kind of critique? Now, I'm only one episode in, so I can't really make the argument that this is going to be as bad as it was, because, you know, the first couple episodes of New York season 13 weren't terrible, so it just ended up being a little bit of a shit show. And Orange County was the first franchise, I believe, to be airing during COVID. Now, I thought, and this is again after years have gone by and having not seen the season, I had the misunderstanding that COVID was at like the forefront of Orange County from the beginning. I had either forgotten or gotten this information wrong, misunderstood that in fact, COVID doesn't happen for like several episodes. So when they started filming the season, it was seemingly, you know, business as usual, and then everything shuts down, and then they realize how bad it was. I remember just from press around that time, I know that at one point, Shannon test positive. I believe that Shane and maybe both Shane and Emily test positive, and I think Shane's case was especially life-threatening and really, really intense. And so I kind of thought to myself that COVID encapsulated the entirety of this season, which doesn't necessarily, COVID still obviously exists, but we're only a couple years out of the absolute heart of the pandemic. I don't know. I wasn't sure if I really wanted to go back to that. And so that was a little bit of something that I was a little bit of like, I guess, baggage that I was bringing to the people's couch when I sat down of like, okay, am I just going to start with everybody sharing misinformation and like either being panicked, which is really triggering, or not being panicked enough, which is really triggering. So to find out that in fact, things, at least for the first several episodes, seemingly are kind of normal is interesting. You can't necessarily apply the overwhelming COVID critique to what it is that you know, I started to watch, which I think is a good thing. Like, I thought I was just going to be starting in the midst of like chaos and negativity. And the reason I'm typically a completionist, I'm not watching the season of Dubai. The only other season of Housewives that I haven't seen in its entirety is season 15. Now, I don't participate in any kind of boycott of any kind. I don't encourage it. If you want to do whatever you want to do, you do it. I think if you are finding joy or escape from any TV show, certainly from any episode of Housewives, you should do that. I think the world is so dark. Everything is, you know, people are dealing with an awful lot. There's a lot of fear and anger in the world. If you can sit down in front of your TV screen, phone, or computer and find something that makes you laugh, brings you joy, or even makes you upset, so you can kind of like funnel some of that frustration and anger into the universe of like fighting with someone about being a Gorgita Crunch or a tree hugger, then that's something that you can do. I'm not someone, nor have I ever been, to be like, do not watch this thing. However, that being said, so I made the decision for myself, not because I was participating in a boycott, but because at that point, Kelly Dodd's social media and what she was saying in the press was so infuriating to me that I didn't think I would be able to focus on the season itself because I was entirely focused and frankly distracted by losing my shit over what she was saying on social at that point. And I didn't want to maybe honestly like see another side to her even because I wasn't interested in talking about Kelly in a way that felt even humane because I felt like what she was doing and participating in this mass dehumanization of people on social at the height of when she was sharing COVID misinformation and racist social media posts, it was not something that I was interested in. She was not a voice that I was interested in amplifying. And so now to go back and watch some of, you know, to watch this season that I hadn't watched prior is to me kind of fascinating because I'm seeing a Kelly that I don't know, maybe she no longer exists. Maybe she exists in another form. I know she said a lot of really, really negative things about the network and Andy specifically recently. I've seen her on episodes of Jeff Lewis Live with Jeff Lewis. She's a chump, which is, I've said this so many times, I think people get it, but it's what we Jeff Lewis Live listeners call ourselves, Jeff Lewis Live listeners and regulars call ourselves, which is the title chump, which was essentially assigned to Jeff by David Bedore, sending him a series of angry text messages where he just repeatedly called Jeff a chump, and Jeff has now repositioned it, repackaged it as honestly a compliment. So I'm a proud chump. So I've seen her in other areas since Housewives, but this is the season, you know, her last season with the show. At the end of this, tail end of it, she was fired. There were people at the time making an argument, one I certainly understand, that she was fired not necessarily because of her behavior on the show, but because of what she was doing in real time. It just... it seemed like there was a decision that the network made after this season to fire the two most polarizing people on the cast, regardless of how you felt or whether or not you agreed with what they were saying and speaking out about when it comes to politics, Bronwyn and Kelly. Now, I remember my limited memory of the reunion was that like seemingly everyone hated Bronwyn. I don't remember if there was a lot of frustration about Kelly. I don't remember a lot of the ins and outs of the reunion itself. That'll be something that I watch once I finish this season. Now that the temperature is rising, and I don't just mean the heat coming between Lindsay versus Carl, it can be really difficult to get my hair under control. I have like this wavy, curly, frizzy, natural texture that I genuinely love, but it can be really difficult to find a product that works for my hair without feeling heavy and genuinely, genuinely counteracts the frizziness that I get naturally if I don't blow out my hair. That's why I love Way. Whether your strands are fine, medium, or like mine, thick, Way has shampoo and conditioner that's your type. I love the detox shampoo because it does exactly that. It detoxes your hair. And because I am a spiritual blonde and do have some color processing, the shampoo helps clean away all the schmutz that accumulates, leaving my hair feeling lighter and better than it did before. God bless that apple cider vinegar. And yes, for that frizz, I rely on the anti-frizz cream. I put it in after I shower, do a little scrunch of my hair, and I'm good to go. Way keeps me looking like me, just a little bit elevated. Jesse Solomon, have you heard my call? If you want volume, Way's Fine Hair and Conditioner will give you a lift without weighing you down. Not sure what your type is? Take Way's hair quiz to find out. Wash your way to healthier hair with shampoos and conditioners made just for you. Go to theouai.com and use code ANDY for 15% off your entire purchase. That's theouai.com, code ANDY. The week before Aunt Flo comes to town is always a tough one. I just feel off. I don't feel like myself. My cravings go absolutely wild. And in New York City, when you can order anything at any time, it certainly doesn't help. Thankfully, now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. And for those who are going through menopause or premenopause, when it can be equally a struggle to find comfort in your body, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony and Estro Control, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. And P.S., BT Dubs, Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it. But it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts, low moods, poor sleep, and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Hormone Harmony can help with all of those things. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ANDYSGIRLS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, HAPPYMAMMOTH.com, and use the code ANDYSGIRLS for 15% off today. I know I'm one of many people who struggles with the all-or-nothing fads. Juice cleanses, soup diets, keto, hours and hours of cardio. If this cycle sounds familiar to you, and it definitely does to me, there's a better, more sustainable way to lose weight. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And let's talk about the big O, obesity. 4 in 10 Americans struggle with it, so there should be no shame in the weight game. It's okay to talk about weight loss and talking about it in a way that feels healthy. With Row, you can sign up online from the comfort of your own home. That's right, the people's couch. This means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ROW.co/andyscrolls. Before being prescribed medication, patients must complete an online medical visit, lab test, and qualify for medication based on their BMI, lab results, medical history, and the discretion of a Row-affiliated healthcare provider. But it is kind of fascinating because I don't think I saw anything about her relationship with Rick. My understanding of her relationship, she seems really happy in her marriage to Rick, is what I've seen on Jeff Lewis Live. I haven't seen Rick on camera. I actually forgot until I watched the premiere episode that he was ever filmed for Housewives. There was a lot of this that frankly was genuinely surprising to me, both because I hadn't seen the original episodes and because, you know, a couple years have gone by. And I, you know, listen, I don't know if I will at the end of this, at the end of watching season 15, and certainly my goal is to watch it and hopefully talk about it before the new episode of Orange County premieres, but I didn't dislike the premiere episode. I thought it was okay. And I say that noting that like some of the casting decisions do seem like they will turn out to be strange. Obviously, Bronwyn is going through a lot. I've for the 18th time, again, have only seen the premiere episode. But during the premiere episode, there's a huge focus on her drinking. She says at the end of the first episode, I am an alcoholic. And I don't know how that's going to be received by other members of the cast. What I had heard about this season overall was that there was some stuff going on, I think, about Shannon and drinking, which doesn't negate, obviously, what Bronwyn was experiencing. But it is to say that it's kind of, it's fascinating that this season is so loaded in its first episode and that there are new people being introduced. I mean, Elizabeth Vargas, to me, I only know her in a limited way from social, and in hearing she was kind of like kooky and not a good fit, one of many, many Orange County ones and one and dones. In her first episode, I kind of thought to myself, like, she is obviously a character. I'm curious to see how she will develop relationships with the cast, if at all. I mean, there are cast members who join Housewives, who join franchises well after they've been created and established, where you're kind of coming in and finding your own rhythm. For whatever reason, Orange County has historically been one of the hardest franchises to break into. I don't know if that's because like Newport Beach, Codo is a difficult kind of place to be, regardless of being on TV, where people just have their own friendship circles, for lack of a better term, to use a very Bravo Housewives term. If that's the case, where it's just hard enough to kind of break into some of this kind of like country club gal time energy on top of maybe the Housewives themselves being extremely territorial, I don't think that Vicky is in a single second of the season. Tamara definitely is not. But Vicky, to me, is like among the more territorial of any Housewives on a show. I think she approaches it more in terms of like, you know, you're on my show, you have to prove yourself to me and pay homage. And so I think that kind of spirit exists regardless of whether or not Vicky at this point is in the cast. She is, Elizabeth Vargas is kind of an interesting case. I was thinking to myself, how would I describe her? And I don't know why, but immediately, instinctively, I thought it's sort of like combining Mary Cosby and Glinda the Good Witch. And I don't know if that's a good description. I truly have only seen this woman for 44 minutes plus commercials at this point. But there's something about her that I do think is potentially endearing. She's also just maybe not built for reality TV. There's something about her personality type that just inherently does not feel like it's a good fit, which doesn't mean she's a bad person, obviously. It does mean it may not be great television. And also that there's something about her that doesn't make sense. And Housewives often works in terms of like some sort of caricature style introduction of like, you seem larger than life. And then over the course of several episodes, we get more of an understanding of exactly what you potentially sacrificed to live the kind of escapist elevated life that you live. Or we get an understanding if you're in like a relationship or marriage that we're pretending is the perfect. And, you know, by the end of the season, you're either separated, divorced, or just screaming at each other, that all that glitters is not gold. And Elizabeth's description of how she received her gold, of being, did she say she was in college? She said she had been working on some sort of college musical theater review or cabaret and met this man. I don't know how much older he is, but I'm assuming substantially older, who it turns out was a successful entrepreneur, not just a successful entrepreneur, but a literal billionaire, which took me by surprise. I was expecting like multimillionaire, but when you get into the billionaire territory, that's fascinating. And to hear her talk about growing up without a lot of financial resources or support, growing up poor, and just feeling like, I want to find a way to take care of myself, to not be in this position as an adult. I need to find an out from this. And she seemingly found an out through her marriage to this man. But what she gave up was not just her independence, but her identity, that he was like making choices about her body, about how she behaved, about her personality. And she realized, you know, I hate this. I don't want to do this anymore. Now, so at this point, she's going through a divorce. The divorce hasn't been finalized, but she's also introduced us to her boyfriend of, I think she said, 3 years. His name is Jimmy, and they've never fucked. She tells Kelly, and who else was at that lunch? Kelly and, I want to say Shannon, but I think that's wrong. Kelly and maybe Emily, Shannon, Bronwyn, possibly. She tells Kelly and somebody else at a lunch at her beach house, which Kelly estimates is worth $6 to $7 million, which is just, damn. I mean, can't wait to see her main estate if that beach house is $6 to $7 mil. Like, my God. But she talks about the fact that she's been dating this man for 3 years. And she's obviously been separated from her husband. Her husband has had a child with someone else, which is something that Elizabeth herself wanted. So that's like the double whammy of, not only am I having this kind of happily ever after with this man, but he has chosen to have a child, the thing he told me he never wanted, with someone else. So that's a lot to take on in and of itself, to take in rather. And then we find out she's been with this man for like a couple years and they haven't had sex because she's still legally married. Now, that's something that's been used against people on franchises, usually in like housewife to housewife combat, for many years. The most recent example on seasons is when Luann tried to use that with Bethany, because Bethany was in a relationship with Dennis after he had been formally and or legally separated from his wife. Bethany told us, had been reiterated, that she actually contacted Dennis's then estranged wife, who she knew, I think, a little bit from high school, possibly boarding school, just to say, listen, I want to make this a little bit less awkward, that I'm, you know, dating this person, and just want to make sure that we're as cool as we might possibly be. And that was something that Lou was essentially saying, like, well, you've hurt someone else's marriage, so how dare you question what's going on in mine and in my life. And with Elizabeth, I'm not used to necessarily the partner saying, because you're still married, I don't want to have sex with you. At that point, I would just wonder, then why are you guys dating each other? Because is his concern that you are in a relationship with someone while you're still married, or is it truly only about sex? I am more confused by it being only about sex than it being a romantic relationship, because I would argue that the same kind of like defense Jimmy is making about not wanting to shtup his girlfriend, you could make about why you're in this dynamic to begin with. If you feel like, for you, from like a religious or cultural or some other positioning, that you don't want to be entangled with a woman who is still legally married, then why are you dating her? It's very odd to me. And Elizabeth seems like someone who finds herself in these situations and just kind of tries to make the situation work. And I just think about just even on the small amount of info we have about Jimmy, and I don't know if he's a part of the season that I will endeavor to watch in the next couple weeks, but it just on its head is just such a strange relationship to be in. If you and your partner decide that you want to abstain and be celibate in your relationship until X period of time, you know, you do you. If that's something that works for both of you, that works for both of you. That's great. But if it doesn't work for one of you and we're still trying to make this thing happen and it's focused on a legal document taking place, this isn't cheating or adultery. There's this, her ex is having a baby with someone else or had a baby with someone else. I don't necessarily understand why you don't want to fuck your gal, especially because she's saying that she wants to. It's a odd circumstance to be in. And I guess maybe this is because it's my first introduction to her, that I just kind of feel like this is just a strange casting decision. And I know that Mary Cosby, you know, for all intents and purposes, she has brought a lot of humor, often accidental, to Salt Lake City, and she's back on the upcoming season. You know, I would also make the argument that she maybe is not built for this world. And I sort of apply that, not again, not to make this orange to equally orange to snowflake, but just to say that there's something about Elizabeth where I'm like, I just don't know if what we're going to do over the next couple of episodes is try to like reframe this person as maybe being more intentionally fun than they are. She might be aghast. She might be like the funniest, most joyful, engaging, charismatic addition to the cast, but there's just something about it on its head where I'm like, this is just such an odd introduction. And I don't begrudge her for it. You know, you don't necessarily know. I think everybody comes into this with a hope that they'll break through. And regardless, that it's like such a compliment to be cast on this show and to be a part of this world. I'm just not entirely sure about her. But I will say that my guess is I'm going to find more entertainment from her than I am from Bronwyn. And with the Bronwyn of it all, I mean, it's sort of an odd premiere episode, no way as bad as what I thought it was going to be. But there are just these moments that kind of sting when it comes to Bronwyn, like her making fun of Gina and Casita in my head. It just made its own little Bennifer pairing. Oh, shout out to Ben and Jen. We're going through some tough times. It's just kind of odd for me with Bronwyn to see her criticize Gina living in this like small townhouse, sure, with six kids, her three and Travis's three, but just to kind of like criticize it in the way that Bronwyn did during the premiere when she's showing off this huge mansion, which she most certainly cannot afford. Am I right? Like, I think she and Sean have run into some financial issues or have had people whose houses they've rented at whatever period of time being accused of not paying those bills. So to see her walk through like the children's movie theater in this 8,000 square foot multi-level house is kind of odd to me, because at least Gina's being financially responsible. She's not putting on airs like 90% of other housewives on any franchise because you feel like, you know, a part of your responsibility and your portrayal is to look like you have more wealth or access or rich than you very well might. I mean, BCC, Dorit, and PK for the last several years, maybe since they've started on the show, probably prior. It's just kind of weird to me to see her just show a little bit too much judgment when I have the benefit or burden of having more knowledge at this point than we maybe did then. And also, I think we're in for a tough season. Maybe in Bronwyn in the early days of stopping drinking. And I don't know if we're going to see her be a part of a particular program when it comes to identifying publicly as an alcoholic. I don't know exactly what is in store for the rest of this season. So putting that aside for now until I have the benefit of more information and watching more episodes. Obviously, we know she and Sean are no longer together. They did some sort of like attempt to consciously uncouple, and then it got really, really, I guess, toxic on social. And she's had some public confrontation stuff with her kids. You know, to hear her talk about one of the reasons why she had so many children was because she knew that when she was pregnant, she was not going to be able to drink. I mean, that really, really lands. I'm sure it's a conversation I would think that she and Sean have had after the fact. Maybe we'll see that in an upcoming episode. But I also just kind of think about the ways that she has applied abandonment to how she sought comfort, and having started drinking and developing a relationship with alcohol when she was really young, when she was 14, how much of that she connected with wanting to just kind of comfort herself and maybe find an escape. She felt abandoned by her mom, who had her live with her grandparents. I think it's because Dr. Deb was going to medical school at that point, if I'm remembering correctly. And I apologize, because this is a couple years ago at this point that I watched season 14, the season before it, when we got kind of more insight into that. But this is also one of those strange areas because of knowing what's happened in the years since. Now, I haven't followed Bronwyn. I mean, I technically follow her on social media, but I don't remember, you know, at this point in time, she and Sean officially separated. At this point in time, it turned acrimonious. But I do remember a period of time in which she announced publicly that she was moving to New York City because she wanted to find herself and maybe explore, I think, entertainment opportunities. And apologies if I'm fucking this up. And was then going to commute to see her kids, I don't know, like once a week, every other week. I just kind of thought, what an interesting choice to make when your kids are going through the immediacy of, you know, a divorce, needing consistency, needing stability, needing presence from both of your parents. And I'm not trying to like parent shame her in any way, but it is to me just such an odd choice to make, especially when you note her history and her understanding of it. It's one thing, I guess you can do this regardless, but it's like one thing to repeat, you know, from your life, things that have happened to you with and by your parents because you're not cognizant or conscious of it. But obviously Bronwyn is conscious of the cost of feeling abandonment, regardless of whether or not her, you know, Dr. Deb at that point felt that she was abandoning Bronwyn. The child in the scenario, in the picture, felt abandoned and then resorted to finding a way to comfort herself, which included alcohol. So to know everything that those kids have potentially been through, not just with Bronwyn, her relationship with alcohol, her, you know, next chapter with sobriety, but also the divorce with Sean and Bronwyn coming out. The kids have, and the fact that there are seven of these children, and it's been in the public eye, and a lot of it has been a part of Housewives storylines and storytelling, to make that kind of decision now. And for me, just as a viewer, to watch her talk about this, knowing what happened in the years that followed, it's really kind of uncomfortable to watch, just because I'm thinking, I mean, that decision on its head never made it did to me, just personally, and my opinion truly doesn't matter, but just personally, as an absolute outsider to this, I just kind of, you know, thought to myself, like, what are you doing? Those kids, they need you, and they have been through a lot, more than they should be responsible for carrying. So I get wanting to find yourself, but unless you have booked a literal job, I don't know why you're going to New York. She's not a trained actor. This isn't like I've been trained in performance and I need to audition for Broadway. I mean, this is, you're going in the hopes of, I don't know, socializing with people where something might come to fruition. It was a strange decision to make when she announced it. I have no idea what's going on in her relationships and world now. I think she's engaged. She might be married. And mazel tov to her for that. I don't know where she and Sean are. I think it's in a, I think, negative place, although it seems like they're pretty up and down in a way that, again, isn't great for the kids. I just kind of think, you know, it's a tough to watch moment to see Bronwyn examine some of this, not solely about her dependency on alcohol, but really about the decisions she made while filming when it comes to her family and her kids and how that changed after the fact, but seemed to be influenced by just wanting the housewives, her time with housewives, to continue. That if she was fired from the show and she wants to stay in the media world, I really just genuinely, as a New Yorker, I'm like, there's nothing really that you need to do here if you don't have a job offer that you can't do while commuting in, I guess. Like, why base yourself in New York and then go see the kids? Why not base yourself with the kids and then when opportunities arrive? I mean, we have email and stuff, right? I don't know. It's, and it may have worked out for her. It may have been a decision that helped her in some way. It is just fascinating because I think we will get more into the abandonment of it all. You know, the premiere episode ends, as every premiere episode does, with the trailer for the season as a whole. And there seem to be some uncomfortable conversations coming up with Dr. Deb. It is just kind of, it's one of those oy vey, cringe, awk moments to think about how she might be progressing in her life and kind of acknowledging and talking about vulnerability, talking about her fear of being vulnerable and opening up, and to think like, oh God, but your kids, you know, they might feel the same if you're not there. how are we going to develop those skills that they need so that they feel comfortable sharing maybe some of their fears and some of their frustration? I don't know. There is something wonderful about the change of seasons here in New York. No, not just upping my electrolytes when I go for a relatively short walk. It's the smell of summer grilling, especially, for whatever reason, I don't know why, in the West Village. It's sort of my seasonal clock. When I start to smell people, that sounds crazy. When I start to smell summer grilling outside, I know summer is upon us. And listen, I can't dig into my veggie dog or veggie burger without some bread or buns. Just because it's summer doesn't mean you have to cut out all the carb-heavy foods you love. Hero Bread reinvented the bread and buns that make summer great. Fluffy, delicious flavor and texture with no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. For me, getting enough fiber and cutting down on sugar are key elements to feeling better throughout the day. Hero Bread also has mouth-watering limited edition bakes, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant. As Luann would say, c'est bon, c'est bon. Keep the carbs out of summer without compromising flavor with Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co and use code Andy at checkout. That's Andy at hero.co. After watching Lala and Sandoval's behavior on the Vanderpump Rules reunion, I developed such an intense thirst. I guess it's contagious when you're talking about Vanderpump Rules. So thank goodness for Fiji Water. Fiji Water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the United States. It has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH, and unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. In fact, Fiji Water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two, giving it signature soft, smooth taste. As someone who has spoken on the pod time and time again about the importance of having electrolytes, especially this summer, Fiji fits into my lifestyle so well. Before going on a little bit of a stroll, just a short one in these warmer summer temps, I grab my Fiji water and I am out the door. Unlike some other premium bottled waters in the market, there's no ingredient statement on Fiji Water because there's nothing added to the water itself. Fiji Water is Earth's finest water. And as someone who's currently deep in the throes of watching Bravo's Finest Television, also known as Summer House, I know that having Fiji Water by my side is keeping me hydrated and refreshed. So Lala, take that. It really kind of landed with me, and also because of what I saw with Gina figuring out how to seemingly amicably divorce and co-parent with Matt on the heels of what we discovered from this season prior reunion, which is that Matt engaged in severe domestic violence, was arrested. It was profound, incredibly disturbing to hear just what we heard of the details during the reunion itself. I don't remember if it happened during this. I think it happened after the season. I honestly genuinely forget because, again, we're talking like a couple years prior. But to see where Gina is now, you know, she has a conversation about wanting to move forward. Matt is in anger management. Gina is saying that she's seeing some positive forward movement from Matt. And, you know, the way that she now has to deal with trying to figure out the restraining order and the restraining order being a part of upcoming legal matters because of the domestic violence and the arrest, and wanting to focus on her love for her kids and wanting to ensure that they have a good relationship with their dad. She said something along the lines of like, I'm not going to take that from them. And I just thought to myself, first off, the amount of pressure that Gina surely is under at this point is like an unbelievable to me, to be honest, but also the idea, like the guilt that she might be feeling of like, I want to find a way to move forward because I want the kids to be able to love their father. I don't want to take that away from them, versus Matt is the one that took any possible feelings of love away from his kids. Like if there is any kind of tension or potential there when it comes to how his actions are going to inform and influence his relationship with his children, that's entirely Matt's responsibility. That's entirely on Matt to carry that weight. I'm sure he is. I'm sure that if you asked him where he was at this point, just going off of what we understand about Matt in the seasons that followed, that he had an understanding about the gravity of violence against his then estranged wife and the impact of that potentially on the kids. And just with Gina, you know, for me to say that's Matt's responsibility to bear doesn't necessarily take the weight off Gina to bear it, because she still has to co-parent with him if she decides to make that choice, which it appears that she is. I just really genuinely felt for her. And so when I'm thinking of this like one-off dumbass, like criticizing, well, I just wouldn't want to be in that dynamic when Bronwyn's saying it, I'm thinking like, okay, I get it. You guys are also, you're all like saying you're, you know, richer than God or whatever, you know, you're living these escapist seeming lives. Gina to me is also dealing with a lot on its face publicly, and I hope that she's given the credit that I think she deserves. Also, speaking of credit, when I saw Emily and Shane go out to dinner and they had this like sort of cute little anniversary moment, and Emily's reflecting on her marriage, the fact that, you know, they had been through recently the worst possible time in their marriage and in their relationship, that was connected to the physical pain that she felt from her issues with her hip, and then having hip replacement surgery has helped her so much in her marriage. I think a lot of people who have chronic issues, especially any issue that deals with pain or pain management, can understand the impact of that on relationships, let alone on a marriage. I mean, that to me makes complete sense that of course her marriage would not be in a good place because she physically wasn't in a good place. If you're not comfortable in your body because of a chronic illness or for other reasons, and you're dealing with intense pain, you feel like you cannot move without experiencing pain, you're not necessarily going to be in a good spot potentially with people that are closest to you, especially I would think with a partner or spouse. So when she said that and said that, you know, they've been working on their relationship and certainly, and Shane's making jokes about the hip surgery, you know, that he would like recommend it or whatever to anyone who's going through marital difficulties, it genuinely made sense to me that that was a huge part of their marital strife, certainly not the only thing that was going on. And I also kind of wonder, you know, I really enjoy Shane. And I remember the first season of watching them, I was like, I think I hate this man. I don't think I hate this man. I know that I hate this man. So to watch Shane change, is it that Shane has changed? Or is it that we, or I guess me, that I have an understanding of him that's better than the first impression? Or maybe it's both, because I remember strongly disliking this man. It felt like he couldn't acknowledge her feelings. He was making jokes about them. He wasn't a supportive partner in a relationship that I felt like Emily deserved to have, that just didn't seem present. And I also kind of wonder, I think it's a combination of many things. I think that they're in a better place in their relationship. And I also think that he's more comfortable with the cameras, because I wonder with him being a smartass and being super sarcastic, how much of that was just me not understanding his sense of humor and thinking that there was more like of a negative toxicity behind the jokes and not just him like making dumb jokes. I mean, his wife didn't understand them, so that makes two of us at that point, but also him being seeming really, really uncomfortable filming. And I think some of that comfort filming, obviously their relationship being on what looks like solid ground, and just knowing Shane better, I think, spending more time with him, seeing him over the course of more seasons other than one. I feel like, I don't know, he's genuinely like a favorite husband for me. I think he's funny. I think he understands Emily. When he makes a mistake, he apologizes and takes responsibility for that. You know, when they went on that, was it the most recent season of Orange County? They went to like a pumpkin patch or something, and she felt like he wasn't supporting her parenting decisions. And instead of doing what we've seen a lot of house husbands do, which is to just completely write off or disrespect their partner's feelings, he took immediate responsibility for it and was like, I'm sorry and I'll do better. That is a rarity on housewives with house husbands and with marriages. And I think he has a better understanding of the kind of partnership that he probably needs to have, not just for himself, but also for the kids and also what Emily needs. And you know, I remember when she first joined and I was like, they got engaged over GChat. Like, so much of this was odd to me. And I think it has just been, you know, maybe there have been many reasons why, but I think this has also been like the benefit of time. Because now in the scene where I'm watching them have an anniversary dinner, I mean, sure, does he like make a face when she's going in for a kiss? Like, Shane's love language most obviously is not physical touch, but I do think he also, he respects his wife in a way that I didn't necessarily see when Emily joined the show. And I'm happy to see it. And now we know in real time he's passed the bar. He's a working lawyer. We love to see it. And I'm excited to see where their relationship goes in the current season when it premieres. Anyway, there was actually a lot for a premiere episode. I'm excited to continue talking about season 15. Let me know if you want more of these deep dive episodes, but I will certainly continue to watch it, because I do want to be fully caught up before the new season premieres. And I'm curious for your thoughts on like how you felt about the Bronwyn and Kelly dynamics on the show. Did you think their firing was deserved? How much of an impact on their off-camera behavior influenced our opinion of what we're seeing on camera? And certainly, I know I'm in for a tough season with Shan. It's going to be a tough season with Shan to get me prepared for the current upcoming tough season with Shan. So just pray for the Shan stands in your life. Am I right? Listen, I'm really excited for this. So just let me know if you want more of these kind of recap deep dive episodes. And if you haven't watched season 15, maybe this is a good time, if you're interested, to jump in and kind of get caught up yourself. I think this is actually the perfect time. And also it's 1,000 degrees in New York City right now. So Bravo is bringing me that extra comfort, a little bit of a cool breeze that does not exist otherwise. So let me know your thoughts and feels if you want more season 15 deep dive episodes. I am also potentially interested in deep diving DC. So let me know your thoughts on that. We're getting into a deep dive generation and of era of AG, and I'm here for it. Follow me on Instagram and allegedly threads at Dame Galley. And again, that Satchel Spectacular I've been promising will be up. I do have to excuse myself and start to go down a little bit of a journey for the next 48 hours. So we'll see if it goes up during then or immediately following. But you can join the AG Patreon, which is the number one way to support the pod, at patreon.com/andysgirls. And thanks so much for listening to this episode. I appreciate you. Am I going to appreciate season 15? It's possible. Crazier things have happened here in the cloth. So stay tuned on that. And thank you again for listening. And I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.